The Doug and Wolf Show.
The next 4 hours of your life will be outstanding wherever you are if you keep listening to The Doug and Wolf Show.
You're calling your shot.
I'm
right
calling
now.
My shot on today's show.
Doug Franz, Ron Wolfley.
You know that's good radio.
Oh, yeah.
Doug and Wolf, 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yes! Master! Oh, good morning, Basinonians. Yes, indeed. On a Wednesday, a Quasimodo Wednesday, the Doug and Wolf Show broadcasting so you don't have to. Doug Lace, all the way out in studio white. How are you doing this morning, my friend?
I respect the man, but for the next 24 hours, I hate Damian Lillard.
Okay, Command and Control, how are you doing this morning, Command and Control? All right, thumbs up right there, Basinonians. We say good morning to you on a Quasimodo Wednesday. You're fired up at who?
Damian Lillard.
Damian Lillard. Why Dame?
His 61 points could cost the Suns a playoff spot.
Oh, yeah, there you go, right there.
If Damian Lillard scores 54 points, 58 points,
right,
57 points more specifically, the Phoenix Suns control their own destiny. 61 points.
61 points right there. Unbelievable. Who's the only other guy with at least three 60-point games in a season? Who is that? Will Chamberlain, ladies and gentlemen.
I guess Will. I was going to say, I don't know, but I guess
it's
got to be Will.
How about that? Are you kidding me?
It's got to be Will.
Holy cow.
Just
the fact he's doing it, right? And he's not 7-4. It's incredible.
I know. He was so fantastic. And yesterday, you know, if Dallas had something to play for yesterday, because if they win, they have a chance to avoid the Clippers in the first round. They could have bumped up to the 6th seed. 7 and 8 seed have to deal with the L.A. teams. So if you can get up to 6, you skip L.A. And that's what Dallas was shooting for. Now Dallas is stuck in the 7. There's a really good possibility on Thursday Portland, Memphis, and the Suns all win, because they have so much more to play for than any other team. And yet, if that scenario happens, Suns go 8-0 in the bubble, and they are not invited to the playoffs.
You know what's so amazing about it, Basinonians? There is a metaphor, of course, that coaches have used for, time millennia. It has been incredible when you stop and think about it, right? But the carrot, the proverbial carrot, right? Chasing the proverbial carrot right there. And the fact that you never get it, the donkey never gets the carrot. It chases the carrot. And because of it, because of the chasing, you get all of this goodness out of that donkey while he's chasing the carrot. Once he stops and actually gets it and eats it, now all of a sudden they become a little lethargic. So, I mean, does that metaphor apply to what is going on right now in Orlando? Maybe it does.
Did you just call the Suns a bunch of donkeys?
I'm not calling them that.
Oh,
of course. It's a metaphor. Jason, maybe it's better to chase the carrot this year than to actually get it.
And by the way, this has, we have plenty of time to get into this today. So this has zero to do with the loss. Nothing. You came and you didn't win. Bad defense. One specific instance, I wouldn't say bad managing, but I really disagreed with the decision, and bad bullpen. There's 900 million reasons why you lost. But Afonso Marquez, can you explain your strike zone?
Mm-hmm. Man.
If it's high, but in the strike zone, it's a ball. But if it's off the plate, inside, outside, or low, that's all a strike.
Yeah.
I am so confused at two leagues, NBA and Major League Baseball, at how these people are employed. This has to be you as an industry saying this is acceptable. I don't get how a strike
Pretty
zone
brutal.
Can be that bad, and these men still either A, have jobs, or B, you don't have robot umpires. It just, no one has been able to explain to me how that level of inconsistency is acceptable. And again, no excuse. Diamondbacks did not lose because of Alfonso Marquez. He was equally horrible for everybody. So you've got to adjust when you go to the plate. But I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you do it as a baseball player when you've got a whole team of Diamondbacks that what's their biggest flaw this year? They keep trying to pull outside pitches off the plate. So you argue as a hitting coach, don't swing at them. Don't swing at them. And then all of a sudden they drop Alfonso Marquez on you, and all of those are strikes.
Steve!
Like, what do you do?
I know. You're absolutely right about that, Douglas. Honestly, listen, you've got to – as long as he's consistent, that's all I really care.
Oh, he was consistently terrible.
As long as he's consistent, that to me at least gives your team an opportunity to go out and compete. If he's not consistent, if it seems like he's hurting your guys as opposed to somebody else, now we've got to check his bookie.
Tim Donaghy. And on a third, let's, like little mini rants this morning, if anybody else wants to join me, you can tweet me on your little mini rant. But with the cancellation of college football in some conferences and not in other conferences, ESPN, every time they talk about this, no matter what show they're talking through, what vehicle, every time, they show this same collection of college football highlights, the same package that ends with Ohio State players dancing. And I have to ask, do you not have enough highlights as the worldwide leader in sports that you can't put together multiple B-roll on college football? You have to have the same thing all the time? I mean, how is that hard?
I think this is entertaining, Doug Grace, man. Are you all right? Did you sleep okay last night? Did you get some wink eye?
I hate it when you bobble balls in the infield and you can't hit a cutoff man. That just drives me nuts. And
yes,
so as soon as that happened last night, it's just like everything is an irritant. It hasn't started yet this morning, but Max Kellerman, quit screwing with your earpiece. Get one that fits.
You know what's bothering me this morning, Basin Onions, the fact that the Pac-12 postponed their season before the Big 12. I mean, what? Honestly?
You just wanted to wait and see what they do?
Oh, yeah. No, the Big 12, I believe that's going to come down probably today. That's just a guess.
Wow, that's interesting.
Once again, even though there's a report out there that says, no, they're planning on going forward, just like the ACC, just like the SEC, they're planning on going forward. Bob Bowlesby, we'll see about that.
Well, 7:30, Wolf, you get to ask the head coach that exact question. Herm Edwards is going to join us.
Are you going to go rogue, Herm? That's going to be my first one right there.
And start playing games on your own?
Just, you know, go Scott Frost. Are you kidding me? Just go Scott Frost and say, listen, we're open. Yeah, anyone want to play? Let's play. Let's do this.
We got to pick this back up. We need Luke Weaver to pitch into a fourth inning, and we need Darcy to continue standing on his head. Day two of the 72 hours of winning, even though we didn't get what we wanted yesterday, starts now. Here we go, Bear.
And now it's time for your Arizona Sports Starting Five. You can't go to work without knowing these five huge stories.
Improve your attitude, Ben.
Here's Doug Franz and Ron Wolfley.
Hi, Vince.
Number five.
There's the pop. Number five this morning, it shows you only in a pandemic, when you have 95 million things going on at the same time, could this ever drop all the way to number five? But today, at State Farm Stadium, starts Camp K.
Here we go. What personnel groups do you want to see? Oh, I don't know. I've got a list of them. Not only that, who do you actually want to see in pads?
Mm-hmm.
Number four.
Number four, here are the beginning of the four things that could possibly, under normal circumstances, ever push Cardinals to number five. But when the Coyotes are playing the most important game they've got in August, guess what? It moves on ahead of the Cardinals. Coyotes, Avalanche, game one. Here we go. Can we get Darcy to continue on this role that he's been on?
Nathan MacKinnon is so good.
Yeah, he is. And Alex, too.
Number three.
Number three this morning, D-backs lose to the Rockies in which they have a 2-2 game going into the bottom of the eighth inning, and then Kevin Ginkle and Alex Young just get absolutely destroyed in that inning, and the Diamondbacks end up losers 8-7. Eduardo Escobar came up to the plate the three of the first four times he came up. He had runners in scoring position and did nothing.
Shake it off, Eduardo.
Oh.
Number two.
Number two, how in the world did this happen? The Phoenix Suns are 7-0, looked like absolute crap again at the beginning of the game. Another game with no DeAndre Ayton, in which just mean mentally, and another game where Devin Booker just carried the team, 35 points, 9 rebounds, 7 assists, only 2 turnovers, and he had to play 41 minutes on the back end of a back-to-back. But they win, yet they do not control their own destiny.
This will pay dividends next year.
Number one.
And the number one thing you need to know about this morning, SEC ACC says, we're fine here. Larry Scott and Ray Anderson say, no, we are not. There is no Pac-12 football in 2020. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. I'm not trying to go political here because you never know how you feel about this as soon as I say it, going through your ears, depending on how you feel about coronavirus and the President of the United States. But it is kind of interesting when the President of the United States is staring down the Big Ten and the Pac-12 and saying it's a colossal mistake for you to cancel, and yet Larry Scott stands right in front of that message and says,
this was an extremely difficult and painful decision that we know will have important impacts on our student athletes, coaches, administrators, and our fans. And I know nothing that we can say will ease some of that disappointment, especially for some of our seniors.
Yeah, it's a mess right now. It really is, right? And there's going to be an awful lot of finger pointing depending on how this thing goes in a couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously, at some point in time, is the SEC going to have to shut down? The SEC, we all know, they are grabbing the torch and they are marching forward. They're saying, we are playing football, right? Well, will they be forced at some point in time to actually shut down? I don't know. But if that does happen, are you going to look at them and say, well, at least they tried? There will be an awful lot of people. Half the country will say, well, at least they tried. And the other half will say, well, you know what? They should have never started.
Mm-hmm.
Fingers will be pointed. You better believe it. That much I know.
I think here's a major, major question, and I think a lot of colleges are going to fail at this, and I'm a little on the SEC, ACC side of things, and that is simply, what's more dangerous?
Now, we want to hold out hope that we have postponed, but we have not canceled. We're going to hold out hope that things will change, and we will be able to go into competition. So as an athletic director in this conference and speaking for my colleagues, we're very proud of the way we've proceeded in this. And I do trust that our student athletes and our coaches and their families are confident that we have done this with their interests in mind from day one and will continue to do so, led by the science and the medicine with the great input from Dr. Aukerman and others in this conference.
The reason why I bring this up is, seriously, what is more dangerous? Playing football during a pandemic when you could go into a bubble, or figuring out a way to try to minimize the damage as much as possible, or asking a 19-year-old developing, growing body to play, what, 25 football games in a year? 30 football? You know, I have no idea what a spring season into a fall season looks like. It's one thing when we're asking a 25-year-old professional to play with the Rattlers in the summer to increase his brand, get his film out there, and then try out and be brought into an NFL team as an undrafted free agent. And then, hey, you know, welcome aboard. You're a professional. Which one is more dangerous? I don't know the answer to that, but I kind of lean to the spring-fall calendar of football being combined as even more dangerous.
No, I'm with you on that, Doug Lease. Honestly, I don't know if a human body could actually do that. I really do not. I will say this right now. I thought it was interesting to see that Bob Bowlsby, again, the Big 12 commissioner, was shocked by Nebraska's intentions. Did you see that story out there, Doug Lease? That Bob Bowlsby was shocked when he actually heard Scott Frost say what he said. And guess what? We all were kind of shocked by that. I wonder, is there a team in the Pac-12 that might actually do it. That's why when you first started playing Ray Anderson right there, if you listen to the beginning of the cut you just played, you could build a case where it sounds like he's talking about we're going to play.
Well, he's saying we're postponing, not canceling, meaning we still plan on playing football. We just plan on playing in the spring.
Right, but it just got me thinking once again, right? It got me thinking once again of teams that are out there saying, wait a minute, we can't start playing in the spring. Stop and think about it. The NFL draft is when? April?
Mm-hmm.
Now all of a sudden you're going to start playing in the spring? Listen, if I'm a first-round pick, if I'm a second-round pick, if I'm going to be drafted for the most part, are you going to play?
Urban Meyer said in a interview on Fox, there's no way you can do that to draftable players. There's no way you can ask them to play college football. You are basically, in his opinion, taking money right out of their livelihoods. And maybe even costing them a livelihood by doing that.
That's why it's not going to happen.
And then you double down on that and say that means if you play in the spring, you're only going to have basically freshmen and sophomores playing football. And then they're going to turn around, and since they're the young ones, they're going to turn right around and ask them, okay, play again. And that's why I look at the Pac-10 and Pac-12 and the Big Ten, and I really disagree with what they're doing strongly from that standpoint. If you would have said we're canceling football for this entire year and we hope to see it in the fall of 2021, I'm going to stand here and say, you know what? That shows they care about the kids and they care about their health. And if you want to rip them for it, hey, I'm going to stand up for them and say back off. But when you say we're just going to push it to 2020, then that means it's still all about the money. Don't act like you're saving the kids from COVID-19, because it's not like you're not going to ask them to play in the fall. And so it's not about the health of the kids if you're going to ask them to do both. That's what I don't get. And I really think they've missed the boat on this. But I want to be fair, because Ray Anderson said something that was really an eye-opener, in which there's new tests or there's new information that the fear is kids or anybody recovering from COVID-19 and then being involved in heavy activity or possibly having COVID-19, not knowing you have it or having such mild symptoms, but playing through it could really cause you heart problems down the road.
When I was 9 years old, my daddy was 31. He stayed home one day and died that night of cardiac arrest. And what they told us is that as a child, he had rheumatic fever and had hardening of the arteries, and he had a heart attack sudden, and that was it. And when I heard about this myocarditis and the fact it's an inflammation of the heart disease that can do the equivalent of hardening your arteries and making your ability to pump blood less and puts you at risk, just the thought of 6 or 7 or 8 years from now, one of our student athletes would fall over like that. And while under our care, we didn't do everything we could to prevent him or her from being in that situation. That affected me.
Yes.
That's strong.
It affects us all. There's no doubt about that, right? And it's personal, obviously, to Ray Anderson. I do know that there's been a lot of reports that are out there, and some of these reports have been accurate, Basinonians, and some have not. I'm not a doctor, okay? I am not a doctor. I'm not an investigative reporter. I'm not a researcher, Basinonians. I don't know. But these reports, at least that I read, it hasn't been confirmed yet, all of the studies. This is developing as we're speaking right now, and listen, nobody wants that, right?
Yeah.
Nobody wants that.
Just like everything else with coronavirus, Wolf, is like, which doctor are you talking
to? It's absolutely right, Doug Gleason. You do have to err on the side of being cautious, right? I mean, you do. That's just the fact of it. It's a touchy, touchy situation right now, but I'm still wondering. I'm still fascinated by Scott Frost, and I'm wondering where this is going to go and how many other schools are going to go Scott Frost.
I think a lot of you have heard it, but in case you haven't, Scott Frost, head coach of Nebraska, said, you know, we want to play a Big Ten schedule, but if we can't, you know, then we'll look around for other options. The commissioner of the Big Ten actually then turned around and said, I don't know how you can be in a conference and be an independent. We expect our member schools to stay together.
Right.
Wow.
What are the legalities, Douglas? You love this stuff. Are you kidding me?
I don't know how they can remotely force Nebraska to stay on a Big Ten schedule when they're not providing a Big Ten schedule. I don't see how the legalities block them. By the way, speaking of things that are said, I don't really have time for this, but it's too strong to pass it up. Tell me if this is a wake-up call for you, Wolf. They hurt us bad. They lied to us. They sat here in front of you guys and publicly said things that they didn't follow through on.
Rafael Palmeiro.
You think that's a little stiff right there?
Yes.
That's a Cleveland Indians pitcher about the other two pitchers, Zach Plesac and Mike Clevenger, escaping, running off in Chicago to go out to dinner.
Oh, my gosh. One teammate
talking about two others.
Hey, Doug Lease, you know how I feel about this. I mean, this is exactly the way it's going to go.
It's funny these 2 points were combined because I keep saying there will be lawyers, and you keep saying there will be fights.
Yes. Oh, it's coming.
That's about as strong as it gets. Coming up next, they remain undefeated. Devin Booker versus Dame Lillard for bubble MVP. Yet there's one thing that's just amazing. 8-0 might not be good enough. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Quite a few interviews for you today to make sure you're paying attention to. And if you're not, try to subscribe to the Doug and Wolf podcast so all of these guests will be right there on your phone. 7:30, Herm Edwards will join us, ASU football coach, to take a look at what this means for the Sun Devils to not play football. Amiel Saldes at 8:45, and Luke Lipinski will talk Coyotes in the bubble and the playoffs coming up at 9:15 this morning. Suns a winner, 130-117 yesterday. And I think it's a positive to say this. DeAndre Ayton completely unmotivated, checked out, and played terrible. And the Suns won anyway. Suns found a way to get it done anyway. And Sarge was amazing crashing the boards. But it's, again, just put it on the shoulders of Booker and say, Devin, can you get us to win, please? And that's where they are, and they win. And at 7-0, they still don't control their own destiny. Wow.
That's cruel and unusual. Come on now. You the prospect of going 8-0 in the bubble and still be on the outside looking in of the play-in game. I don't think anyone saw that happening, but it's a very real possibility, obviously, right now. So we'll see how the Mavs come out tomorrow. We'll see what happens with the Blazers. But after going for 50-plus and 60-plus, Damian Lillard doesn't look like he's going to let the Blazers lose. So
right.
Your eyes are on the Grizzlies at this point, and then what Luka decides to do tomorrow in the Suns finale, right?
You know, I just can't get over the fact the Suns, of course, are 7-0 right now. And I'm sure there's a lot of people out there. Basin earnings, are you walking around mumbling at the compound this morning saying 7-0, 7-0? You just can't even believe the Suns right now are 7-0 in the Orlando bubble. The bubble, guys, you just have this feeling, don't you? You have a feeling that in the long term, looking back, this bubble, this is going to be a still point moment in Devin Booker's career and the Phoenix Suns' career. I have this feeling that it's going to impact future events because of what's happened in the bubble right now, and regardless of what happens at the conclusion of the bubble. Mm-hmm. To me, they've already won.
You know, it's interesting. If the criteria was to get within 4 games of the 8 seed if you're the 9 seed, if we were talking about the Suns just missing out on that window, I wouldn't be thinking about it as much. But there's a very good chance they finish tied with Memphis. And the first tiebreaker is head-to-head. They went 1-3 against Memphis, and in 2 of those games just completely didn't show up. Mm-hmm. I mean, Ayton was awful in 2 of those games. Then, remember, in order for a tiebreaker to happen, this is going to sound like really complex math here, you have to be tied in the first place. They lost like 2 days after Christmas to a horrific Golden State team because they were still had their heads on Christmas. I will never forget watching that game. I was in Ohio at the time and couldn't believe how terrible they played. And it was a classic case where I don't understand how a franchise who hasn't been to the playoffs in 10 years and has been horrible for five goes into a game and says, oh, well, we're better than you. What have you accomplished? And they did that because Golden State was so bad and they lost. So you, if you're Monty Williams, how powerful will it be to be 8-0 and then at the beginning of training camp for next year, whenever next year starts, you show bits and pieces of your games against the Grizzlies and Warriors and say, this is why you didn't go to the playoffs.
But, you know, there's the record. Okay, you have the prospect of going unbeaten. But then there's also the level and caliber of competition, how seriously they're taking it, i.e. yesterday. Four of the five starters for the OKC out, right? I mean, you had and so you had that dynamic right there. So to me, it's the eyeball test, guys. It's to your point, Doug, there were games where they were totally checked out in the regular season before it stopped because of the pandemic. It's not just the record, because I'm not sure what you can gauge on the competition, how many of their opponents were taking it all that seriously. But when you look at how they were playing and the intensity and urgency with which they were playing, hopefully that denotes a change in culture, which we've talked about. Hopefully that shows a turning point for the Suns in going about their business. And we don't have to worry about some of the elements we've seen over the last decade or so.
So much of the time, you go as your best player goes, based on what you do, right? That's not going to be a shock to anybody. And I love, I don't know about you guys, but I love what I'm seeing out of Devin Booker.
Oh,
and I'm talking
crazy.
About both ends of the floor, offensively and defensively. I love what I'm seeing from Devin Booker right now in terms of sharing the ball as well, taking over games when he needs to and sharing the ball when he needs to distribute. I love what I'm seeing from Devin Booker. That is the culture. I just, right now, he is the best player in that locker room. He's the best player within this organization. He is the culture, and he's totally adopting this two-way mentality. You watch the way that he's playing in this bubble right now. That is going to carry over to next season.
You know, Paul, with what you were saying, it doesn't bother me about the other teams because the Suns are so terrible this year. It doesn't matter who somebody else puts on the floor. If the Suns are going 8-0 for a team, when you say this line, Devin Booker before the bubble had never won five games in a row. So right. I don't even care who the other team is putting out there at all. And Monty was even selling it the other way.
Everybody in the league can, you know, look at us and see that we've not lost here, and that puts a bit of a target on your back. And so we're getting great effort, and some of these teams were getting their best games. You know?
Now, here's what worries me, Paul, is the exact opposite. If there are moments in this season where we can actually point to, like the Golden State loss, and say, you actually came into a game with your head so far in the clouds as a terrible organization that you thought you had the right to be arrogant and win just because you exist. What just happened in the first quarter against Oklahoma City and Philadelphia? I mean, that was the first quarter of the last two games was terrible basketball. The Suns were awful in both games, and it seems like they did exactly what we're trying to get them to stop doing, looking at the opponent's talent and dictating their effort based on the opponent. And they did that for two games. Luckily, to Wolf's point, we got Devin Booker and they don't. And that's why the Suns won.
And my expectations are realistic. I'm not saying they're going to go out there with playoff intensity for all 48 minutes during an event here, this bubble brand of basketball where a lot of teams are treating it like a glorified summer league and their lineups reflect it. As I even screwed up the opponents, I can't even tell the difference between Philadelphia and OKC and which day they play, because you know what? They're both holding out so many stinking starters at this point. It's hard to even distinguish who sure. these guys are, most of whom you've never heard of. But once again, my point is that despite some down moments, and yeah, you're right, they looked like they didn't have their legs in the OKC first quarter. That was bad. And for them to come all the way back and win by 27, if memory serves, after getting down 15 in that game, I want to hope and pray that that's the competitive fire in this team that we're going to see now under Monty Williams permanently going forward. That's my big takeaway, is I think they've turned that corner, I hope.
The Sixers, I mean, they rested their starters, right? And they hung around, no doubt about it, a lot longer.
Well, Embiid had a small turned ankle, and Simmons is out for the year. So yeah, those are the big ones.
Yeah, absolutely. But still, when you think about it, Al Horford, right? He didn't play at all. I mean, listen, the Sixers are trying to get right. They're trying to get right, and the Suns took advantage of that in the long run. But remember, try to remember when you scrimmaged against the JV team in high school and you were varsity. Do you remember that, Paul? Do you remember what that was like you were varsity and you're scrimmaging the JV? I mean, these kids were junior varsity. Tell me where your intensity level was. Mm-hmm. It was right in the tank. Is what it was.
I still remember fouling Mike Hartung on a breakaway. I caught up to him and I fouled him, and he wanted a piece of me because I was a sophomore and he was a senior. And how dare I foul him on a breakaway to take away his easy layup?
Listen, the Suns have played very, very well down in the bubble right now, and I'll guarantee you they did not feel threatened by what they saw yesterday.
It's
now
true.
Maybe you can sit there and say, "Oh, they should have. Oh my God, they're the Suns. They stink." The fact of the matter is that if you're varsity and you're playing the JV, you tell me where your intensity level is.
You're either a competitor or you're not.
Yeah, you have a
chance to compete.
You're so right about that. You're going to go about your business or you're not. But they're human beings, not a computer chip.
By the way, just so you know, and no, I'm not saying this is going to happen. I don't think there's any chance of this happening. But I'm watching. I wanted to. If Portland loses and if Memphis loses and the Suns and Spurs win, it's Suns-Spurs 8-9. Come on.
That's good stuff. That's appointment viewing on Saturday. That would be good stuff. And by the way,
hits a three in that game, I'm out.
And by the way, when Devin Booker – passes Walter Davis,
I know,
for most 30-point games in a career, he's stinking 23 years of age.
In half the games.
I mean, wow, right? Wow. I know it's a different game and so forth, and I know the physicality and defense isn't there in today's brand of ball, but still, Walter Davis and the scoring acumen of that dude and an all-timer in Suns history, and Devin Booker just blew his records out of the water.
The bubble has changed Devin Booker and the Phoenix Suns.
Hopefully, yeah. Coming up next, boy, here's a tough question. Do you hand out participation trophies in Major League Baseball? Are you happy the Diamondbacks showed the heart to come back? Or would you rather ask the question, why did it need to? That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Well, you might remember a little shindig back in April that they called the NFL Draft. Do you remember that?
I do remember that, Douglas.
ESPN's Todd McShay was not part of their coverage about 2 or 3 days before the draft. He got COVID-19, and he actually went to the hospital. Today is his first day on television since the NFL Draft.
Wow.
So a friend of the show, he used to come on every other Monday. I just wanted to say, glad to have you back in the media. You were sorely missed. It's good to see him. And he said something this morning on radio, which was really powerful, of just, hey, this thing is absolutely no joke. It completely messed with me. And when you're laying there in the hospital, you start to take it seriously. So it was pretty powerful. But just wanted to say, Tom Boucher, good to see you on television.
Good to see that he's back and healthy.
Yeah, this is one of those statements that really lets you know it's tough right now. It's tough right now being a Diamondback.
You know, my point of view might be a little bit differently than some. You know, we got off to a slow start, and we know where our challenges were, and I'm seeing things improve piece by piece. So I can dissect it a lot of different ways, and it'll add to my frustration. But I can't get there. I can't allow that to happen. I got to keep this ship on its course and focus on the next day. And, you know, what my job will be tonight is to have conversations. I'll walk in tomorrow and do the best that I possibly can in every area to put the guys in the right position, help us win a baseball game. And it's been a different mindset. I'm not going to lie. Sometimes I don't know if I should laugh or if I should cry, but we're going to be ready to play tomorrow.
I love that right there from Torrey. That is so honest, is it not, right there? Yet at the same time, he's right. He's got to have big shoulders in this situation. Does it matter? Does it matter that they lost this game, but they seemed to come back in this game. Is that important to you, Basinonians? For me, I can tell you right now, in the Wolf League compound, it is important. It does matter. Listen, comebacks aren't comebacks unless you win, right? Mm-hmm. They're close losses is what they are. They're not comebacks unless you win. Does that matter, though? Yes, it does individually. Collectively, I don't think so. It does to the dudes that actually put together at-bats and scored five runs with one out in the ninth. It matters to them. I guarantee you right now it mattered to Eduardo Escobar to actually get a ribby. It mattered to him.
Escobar came up in the first two runners on, and he popped up. He came up after a Christian Walker home run, and so you know the pitcher's a little rattled, and he just had a simple fly out. He came up with a runner on third and two outs in the sixth, and he did hit a soft line drive, but still he made another out. And then he came up in the eighth inning with a runner with runners on first and second, and he struck out.
Yes.
Finally got a hit.
I mean, think about it again. Do you think it mattered to him? But yes, it did. Okay, now that's just a small, once again, it's not going to fix everything that's happened to Eduardo Escobar. But maybe there's a glimmer of hope right there. The Diamondbacks need him. They need him to start playing the way that he's capable of. Team games are made up of individuals competing. If you want to be good, you've got to have confident individuals. Losing doesn't eliminate driving in a run when you're struggling. It doesn't eliminate the fact that it happened. Losing doesn't eliminate Zach Gallen's confidence level. I'll guarantee you that much.
Here's the question, though.
It matters.
Are you competing for nine innings? Are you competing on every play? Are you focused in competing every play? And in the case of the Arizona Diamondbacks, no, they were not. And when I talk about competition, it's really simple to me what competition means. Is every ounce of your being focused on defeating your opponent? And there was a play in the eighth inning of this game in which you've got Murphy on base, and up at the plate is Tapia, who hits a double. And then they throw the ball around the infield, butcher it, and the run scores. Murphy's out at the plate if you execute the cutoff correctly. He's out. And now it's a little hard to transpose and say, well, then it would have been tied 7-7. I have no idea what the comeback would have looked
like.
I don't know how the Rockies would have changed their pitching strategies when now the tying run had been, blah, blah, blah. You don't know how the rest of the game would have gone from that point. But that was a terrible, terrible mistake. Now, because I'm watching the game on television, I don't know whose mistake it was, I admit.
Yeah.
I don't know whether it was the outfielder not making a throw. I don't know whether it was Marte not hustling to get to his spot. I don't know if it was Marte trying to ole a short hop instead of attacking the baseball. I don't know what happened. But what was interesting, when you just heard Torrey Lovello talk, Torrey Lovello said, there's some things that I'm really frustrated about, and we're going to have conversations about those things. Well, I asked him, totally admitting, I don't know without me being at the game and I'm watching it on television and I'm just, I'm just based on what are the directors doing and what camera angles do I get to see. I never got to see what really happened on that play other than a short hopped ball that looked funny. And I asked him, just give us a rundown. Just kind of explain to us what happened.
We're thinking about the same play. You're talking about Murphy rounding third base coming up.
Yeah.
We short hopped the cutoff man which resulted in the inability for us to pick up the baseball. So those are little things. It's a great question. Those are little things that get to me more, believe it or not, that we need to tighten up. We'll make sure we have those conversations.
But at the same time, Douglas, I'm sure you're going to admit that competing doesn't mean you're not going to make mistakes. I mean, if you compete, it doesn't mean that you win all the time, that you play well all the time. It doesn't mean you're not going to make mistakes if you're competing.
There's a difference between making a mistake and not caring enough to win to stay focused. If you go through hours and hours and hours of practice and you know baseball situations and it's very clear you are in this spot at this time, and then it's like a pitcher. Okay, and this is because if you didn't see the play, this is an easier way. How many times have you seen a pitcher not run to first?
Yeah.
That's, to me, that's not competing.
Yes.
When you decide, wait, I'm not going to be having my intensity and my focus in this moment, you forget to cover first. I don't know whether it was Marte's fault. I don't know whether it was the outfielder's fault. I don't know what happened because I didn't see it. But I'm just like Torrey did see it. And he said those are the things that upset me more than a lot of the other things.
No, absolutely. But at the same time, once again, being a guy that went out there, and that was my whole thing, and that's the reason why I played the National Football League, was because I was prepared to compete and give everything that I had. I made mistakes all the time. And yet I competed. I gave everything that I had. And you know what? Honestly, you can say, well, you know what, Luke Weaver, you didn't run to first base on that one. And you're right about that. But it's not like you're not going to have mental lapses from time to time either. It's not like you're going to play a perfect game.
When I see somebody make a mistake like that, and at the time it was tied 2-2, and then with that play that scores Donnie Murphy, that now makes the score 8-2. You're sitting there in that moment, and it's 7-2. You're mad at your bullpen. You're mad at the situation. You give up a hit, and then you make a mental error. That, to me, is you stopped competing. As soon as that ball was hit, you're like, oh, man, not again. And you shut down.
Yeah.
You thought, we're not going to come back now. Oh, this is ridiculous. And it's that split second lack of competing that made you a loser in that moment.
Yeah.
And that's why the Diamondbacks could possibly not go to the playoffs, just like the Suns didn't compete against Golden State.
I highly doubt that a guy chose not to compete. That's just me. That's my gut feeling. He chose not to compete. If he did, get him out.
Coming up next, Cardinals start competing today. Kind of. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.